Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Howdy, partner. Welcome to the Mind Sculptors, where we shoot from the hip. My name is Texian, and this is my comrade. Cowboy Lahan. Cowpoke Lahan? What is the gender-neutral version of cowfolk?
Of cow folk.
Well, cow folk are maybe actually like a hybrid people.
Yeah, cow folk sounds like something that should be in Middle Earth.
You know what? I'm gonna pause right here. Wizards of the Coast, you don't have the balls to make cow folk in one of your set.
Mark Rosewater, we're calling you out right now.
Gavin Verhey, you know, we've run across each other through time and space, and I just think maybe you could have the balls to make cow folk. I think maybe
you've made merfolk, you've made tree folk,
you made tree folk,
but do you have
the
nards, the hair on your chest,
the cajones,
the audacity,
the gumption? Hell yeah. Okay, I got the last one.
Oh my gosh. I think my favorite part about having you on this podcast every week is the fucking around of like us trying to like fuck around as much as possible while also like delivering something that is like close to like
consumable
content.
It is fucking around and sequentially then finding out.
Welcome to the podcast. I am like you said, I'm Cowboy Lahan. Cowfolk Lahan.
Yeah,
I'm a cowfolk wizard. I'm a base.
Yeah, I don't know why I got to get away with Texas and put you as cowboy.
Yeah, honestly, if either of us were more Texas, it's probably me.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a scrawny little white boy from Massachusetts. For sure, I am not Texas.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. So. I gotta say, this has nothing to do with magic. It has nothing to do with, cow folk or Texas or Massachusetts.
Is it sports? I'm out if it's sports.
It doesn't have anything to do with sports.
Fuck yeah.
It does have to do with the fact that yesterday I was coming home, running a few errands. Go to the door of my building, which, by the way, our elevator is still out.
Sick.
So fucking love that for us.
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
Getting our steps in it was not intentional, nor was it requested. But we are getting our steps in. So I come home, and so like I live in an apartment complex. People get evicted sometimes, right?
Yep.
Usually I have not seen eviction notices posted on the main door to the building. They are posted on like people's doors, right?
Right.
So I come home and the first thing I see is for this like apartment of like a couple dudes. And it's just an eviction notice
for the whole apartment.
The whole apartment to see.
Fucking crazy.
I saw that and I was like, that feels somewhat like an invasion of privacy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I guess I don't really see, like, I thought about it more and I was like, I guess it's not that different from posting it on their door. But like,
yeah,
like it feels different, though, right? Like when you think about it, it is functionally about the same, right? Like there's really no big difference there. It's still public, but like it feels more passive aggressive, right? Like
it's not a good look on the landowner for sure.
Yeah. Like it's not wrong. However,
I would be hesitant to call it right.
Well, it's not wrong in the sense that they are breaking law. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Morally and ethically wrong, perhaps it is. Obviously, I don't know the whole situation, but if you are a rental property or a person who rents property, there's a pretty good chance that you are not following any good moral or ethical codes.
Damn, tell them how it is.
People don't understand. I'm a lot more of a commie than people think I am.
Oh boy, do I have a not podcast story for you?
Oh boy, I want to hear it so bad. Yeah. Let's talk about something
before we do, entered my frame of mind, right? So with what we're going to talk about today, I was like, okay, let me look at new cards, see if anything new's come out for what we're going to talk about. And I saw the Ixalan page and I was like, oh, let me just click it again. And you know what's going to drive me crazy until it comes out is the new Red God. I think that card's actually going to be like the first mono red damage commander payoff.
That's viable.
Like actually works. Yeah. Like Torbran was really close, I think. Mm-hmm. I think people have gotten very close with it. I think like there's been a number of other ones that are like, I think someone tried playing like a Solophim deck and like did something with it recently, I think. It was at like not a huge tournament, but I think someone did something with it. And I was like falling asleep seeing this deck and my mind was blown.
Maybe it was actually in your sleep you saw this
deck. No, it's Commander Invasion. Yeah. Oh, it was the event that was not in the US, maybe.
Isn't Commander Invasion the one that's in Japan?
I don't know. Let me look it up.
Feels like it's the one that's in Japan.
Commander Invasion. Oh, yeah, no, it was the one that was in Hamburg, and it had like 100.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of which, did you hear about the controversy with that?
No.
So, apparently, there's the CDH tournament, right? And the finals match, they basically were like, they had to put a timer on the semifinals because something came up, right? And I think like it had something to do with like the event space or something like that, and they said the person with the highest they added this in the semifinals, they added this rule, right? They go, if it's a draw at that time, the person with the highest life total just goes to the finals, right? So everyone was like not happy about that, right? One of the pods, this is what I've been told, right? Let me see here. Okay, actually, here's a write-up on it. This is where the question with Josh goes. Apparently, two pods weren't informed properly that when time is called, the win is given to the player with the highest life total. Last two pods are informed of this with about 30 and 17 minutes left on the clock.
I mean, that greatly changes
yes.
the way you play.
The squad and pod agrees is a horrible way of deciding a game winner. and life is not when life is a resource, right? So the pod takes a decision with ruling wise a no-no, and they decide by dice rolls. Head judge notices this, immediately calls the pod out, and gives all the players a game loss. So then, if you notice, they just said they gave all the players a game loss. Meaning there were three players in the finals.
I hate this.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's crazy that the players were like, yeah, this is objectively bad, right? We might as well gamble. And they were like, yeah, okay, no, all three.
Well, okay, so first.
I think their decision to like go for it was not smart, right? The way I've been told the story was that they had objectively like said that they weren't going to do it, and then they were DQ, which is not quite the case. There's a little more context there, which is like, you did a thing you can't do, right?
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's like, you know, if you, like, on one hand, like, so what should have happened,
yeah,
if you're already in this fucked scenario, you just take the person with the second highest life total from the highest pod and pull them in. Granted, you've made this, like, you know,
oh, it's awful.
You've made this
yeah
audible, so you're already in like a situation, but
right.
But anyways, yeah, that's kind of on like up. Everybody on that kind of sounds like a failure of like everybody involved.
Yeah, just I mean like, to be honest, as a TO, if you're instituting a last minute change like that, like, that's, to me, it's like unacceptable. I think the players were very, very ill advised by going for the dice roll thing. Like, you got to know as a tournament player
that you just never really
like
period.
One thing you can't do. I think there is a world where you say like, hi, all four of us object to this change and would like a difference next time or this time, and like make a big deal out of it. That's fine. Like, I think everyone has the right to, like, you know, stick a claim in what they believe in, but like,
yeah,
but then being like, well then we'll gamble, it's like, no wait, you lost the thread of the narrative there for sure.
That one ain't a goof. God, rolling dice, man. Just I feel like I have so many stories from over the years of like judging or being involved in this game where something has happened that's weird or crazy, and then players decide, oh, let's just, you know, roll dice for it, mm-hmm. and then those players get DQ'd or something, and it's like, hey guys, how many times do we need to have the same conversation again? Like, just don't make it, like, you cannot just... They literally say at the beginning of events, you cannot determine the outcome of games by random chance.
Yep. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like.
No, I'm with you. But all of that to be said, bringing up this tournament, was that a Solifim deck did make the top 16. I'm not sure if they were one of the DQ players or if they were one of the people eliminated in top 16. But that's the Praetor that doubles damage, which is pretty cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So. Mono Red's back on the menu, baby. And then I figured if that card's good, then the new one's got to be insane, right? Like the fact that, like, you can have a Sardine.
The one that definitely doesn't look like Bane from Baldur's Gate. Or not Bane. Ball. The, like, all art of it looks like the symbol for Ball.
Oh, from, okay.
Dungeons.
Still haven't played the game, so couldn't tell you.
Well, it doesn't even, like, it Ball is just a, like, god in...
Yeah,
Forgotten Realms, regardless, but
my
Forgotten Realms friends out there will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know, the cool kids out there. you need to get the game so that we can do a playthrough of it together.
I agree,
because I think that would be so much fucking fun. I'm doing a playthrough right now as a tiefling paladin warlock. Which is super fun.
Yeah.
Well, the fun thing is when you play as a paladin and as a warlock, you get to refresh your smite spells every short rest, because you just use your warlock spell slots, and it's super fucking cool.
And now that half the audience has officially left,
Are you kidding? Most of our audience uses time codes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. Now that most of the audience has decided that they will use the time code in the description down below, or in the comments down below.
Yeah. So this will be coming out on Monday because, you know, we're recording this in the past.
Yes.
And
wait, what?
We are. What?
I'm joking.
Oh, okay. You said that with enough earnestness that it threw me off. And we will be playing in Mox Masters events this weekend. You're going to the Invitational because you're, you know, fucking good at Magic. And I'm going to be playing in the Open because I don't want to play in the Invitational. Or not in the Invitational, but I don't want to play in the Last Chance Qualifier. Probably not make it and then have wasted money. So I'm just going to play in the Open.
Take your defeatist attitude and stick it, Cal. Go play the qualifier. Do it.
You know what? If I had more money,
yeah, that's fair.
Available, and we had planned on going to this sooner,
yeah,
and so that Casty could take off time from work,
yeah.
I'd absolutely be playing the LCS, it was just kind of like the perfect storm of like things that didn't line up where I was just kind of like, you know what? It's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
I don't have to play in the 10K. I can just play in the 4K. It'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But we are both playing
probably
Tiv, the Time Man Taylor.
I will not be playing that specific variant of this deck for sure.
The funny thing is our decks are only like, I think like 10 cards off.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, most of it lists are within a certain, you know, realm of reality.
I mean, like, I think most of our differences are just like, I feel like at most play style differences.
Sure.
So in today, we kind of thought it would be fun to kind of go through and talk about some of the rationale. For what we're thinking about going into this tournament, why we're going for certain card choices, and also work through maybe some of our card choices because we're both a little like unsure of exactly the 99 we want to be playing. And just show you some of give you a little bit of behind the scenes on what our bullshit looks like when we're talking through decks. And exactly what to include in our decks. You have a Miri tail in.
I do. Yeah.
It is very cute. So let's send me your list real quick so I can see your list.
The public one I've been using for quite
the public
time.
One.
Yeah.
So basically, I think a good place to start is going into this event. Obviously we're playing different sides of the event, but what are you kind of expecting from a competition standpoint where you are thinking like this is where you want to be and the logic behind it?
So I really am not sure like because, you know, I know several people that have qualified for the Open, right? But I know that I know infinitely less people than I should, right? because I'm not sure, like, who's done well at a couple tournaments, who's done well at every tournament, who can even make it out to this, right? Like, obviously, there's going to be some familiar names that you see at every tournament, right? You're going to see your Freedom Waffles and your Wounded Satellites and people like
Just
that.
Ice.
And Just Ice, yep, absolutely. And definitely a lot of people I know from that department of things, right? So there's that aspect
the
of it.
Justice department.
The justice. And so I'm definitely expecting to see a certain... Are you using Tiv the Time Man as your most updated version?
Yeah, Tiv the Time Man is where I'm at right now.
Okay, cool. So I'm definitely expecting to see like the quote unquote regulars for sure. And then, you know, there's going to also be like People who have qualified through the Playing with Power League, right? Like, it's been a while since the qualifier happened, right? And it's been many, many tournaments. And so that's kind of an interesting aspect to it, right? There's been some European winners who, like, I don't think are making it out, right? Like, so I don't see people who I know, like Memo or a lot of the Taiyam pilots, I don't expect to see out. So there's a certain part of, like, the expected...
Darn, no Taiyam.
But I don't expect to see, like, all of the normal Mox Masters attendees there, right? There's a certain level of, like, okay, but, like, how many people can reasonably get here, right? So that's definitely an aspect to think about, for sure. And with all that being said, there's definitely, like, several different aspects of this tournament that I think are going to be, like, people bringing their best foot forward, right? Like, it is an invitational. It is a big tournament at the end of a year's worth of tournaments, right? So, you know, no one's going to be, I shouldn't say nobody. I think considerably less people are going to be bringing their, like, spice to a tournament like this. I found myself wanting to build certain decks this week and in this month, and I'm just like, I don't have the capacity to be able to do that right now. You know what I mean?
I was actually thinking about that, about how, like, I've been really, really, especially because over the last few months, we've been talking a lot about, like, Yidris and specifically like green and Gnaws. And I like can't get my brain off of it. And I want to, like, spend time and play it and take it to something. But I literally, like, this week was, like, the first week where I could actually dedicate time to it. And I'm like, I have 3 days. I just don't have enough time. Put this all together.
I know. I literally went from tournament to tournament to spending an entire week helping Lou with Comic-Con to tournament. I've had zero time.
And that's not even also acknowledging the fact that you were at, like, cons before that too, right? Like, you've just been, like, on the go for, like, 2.5 months.
Yeah, that is also the case. You can't tell by my voice being burnt out at the start of this podcast. Yeah, there's all those aspects to, like, what I'm expecting in this tournament. And you know, there's something, like, poetic about me bringing Tivit to this, right? Because I'm pretty sure, I think I won the first Mox Masters.
The first Mox Masters was the debut of this deck, if I recall correctly.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was the first Mox Masters. Please someone correct me if I'm wrong.
It might have been, was it the second one?
I don't remember.
You keep talking and I'll look.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was either the first or second Mox Masters tournament, because I'm pretty sure I won the first one in top four, the second one. All I know is I have a pretty good record of Mox Masters. So this
Mox Masters October 2022. That is a year ago.
Yeah. I think that was the first one. I'm pretty sure. Because you know what's funny about that? That one and the one after it that I top forward, those didn't even count for qualifying for this event. So I was like,
L-O-L.
Yeah, Ryan announced the point system and I was like, sick, dude, I'm in. And he was like, no.
Nope, no, you're not.
I was like, come on, bro. I won in top forward. I should have more than enough points.
Yeah.
but either way, that was funny at the time. So point being, right? There's something poetic about, like, winning the first one, going undefeated with Tivit, and then, like, coming back, repping Tivit again. And just also there's, you know, I have won two tournaments this month, each on a different deck. And I'm kind of hoping for the three-peat.
Now you want to go back to the best deck.
Yeah. Look, I love Tivit. I do. There's been times where I'm like, yes, it's the best thing. I'm a little worried about how people perceive me playing Tivit a little bit. I'm a little worried about Tivit resolving just ever, which sucks a bit. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not excited about that part of it, but we'll see how it goes. The other part of me really wanted to play Sisse for this weekend, but I am choosing to still think about it. If I'm being honest,
here's the thing is that if you play whatever you play going into this weekend, you're going to have that problem.
Yes.
Like, I don't think any deck you take.
Yeah.
I don't think the commander is going to matter in that regard nearly as much, because it's like, you won two time twisters in a month, like it's, you're going to be on people's radars.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely recognize that part, which is like upsettingly kind of an argument to play Blue Farmer Kinnan, right? Because like then those are, you know, decks that can take that wall.
But I also think that's a reasonable argument to play Tivit, because Tivit's like a very good, like, well, I don't have my, I'm not playing, like, not that worried about my, getting my commander out right now. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that's very fair. Very fair.
It's not like you're trying to turbo out Tivit. You're just kind of like, Tivit's there.
Right, and when
you
need
it, you go for it.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there are hands where that's more the play pattern than others, but.
Sure. But yeah, no, I love the idea of playing Tivit this weekend. Me playing Tivit this weekend is entirely, Tivit is probably the deck I feel the most confident on going into a competitive setting. You know, I, like I said, I'd really like to play a little bit more Storm eventually. You know, I'm very interested in doing stuff with like Yidris and maybe trying to, take another look at like the Sands White Storm shell a little bit.
Right.
I don't really have as much time that I'd want to dedicate to that. So I'm going to, you know, play the deck I feel the most comfortable on. And, you know, of course that's Tivit. And it, you know, I gotta say, it's kind of funny because you've been playing all of these different decks. I've been starting to field a lot more Tivit questions.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, oh, well, Ian hasn't played Tivit in a minute. So Cal, you play Tivit.
Yeah. I mean, it's been Baltimore. It's not that long.
Listen, man, people have short times or what is it? Yeah, people have short attention spans.
Attention spans, yeah.
But yeah, so I, you know, I'm playing the deck that I feel the most comfortable on. I also still think that it's a very well positioned deck. Your cat is being offensively cute right now. And so I think going into it, we talked about this a few days ago, where there's like some cards that I'm like, I would love to find a slot for this.
Yeah.
But I feel like we can both comfortably say this, where I feel like both of our decks, we feel are like pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's like I go through the list and I'm like, I don't know what the cut is.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah,
and even in, so funny enough, I was sleeving up this deck the other day to practice with it and then use it during a coaching session. And I was like, funny enough, the going through and being like, oh, where is this card? I can't find this card right now. To be honest, why am I even playing this card? That happened to me like twice. And I was like, oh, thank God. I got rid of two cards that I was kind of mid on anyways, you know?
Yeah. So
that part was pretty sick.
It's funny to me because like, I just had like all of these iterations of this deck. Like I go through my mox field and it's just like my deck building process. It's kind of fun to go back and look at my deck building process, because so much of the process is like go to the extreme of like a play pattern and then like dial it back.
Absolutely. Right.
And like you can see
that. Worried that Sheoldred is that. I'm not going to lie.
Do you?
Yeah. I have Sheoldred in the list right now, and I think Sheoldred's like sick, right? Like I played it in one game the other day, and it was just like, okay, it was putting pressure on the table, it was doing a bunch of shit, right? But like, that card makes me like, I don't know, it's so insanely good. The body's great, like the body's freaking criminal. And like, and like legit, like a 4/5 death touch for four. Are you fucking kidding me? With
it's upside? Like way above rate.
Yeah, it's like insane. And like I get why it's like $100 card, right? But like the other part of that is like I'm looking at this card and I'm like, okay, but like the other cards that could be in that four drop slot are also stupid powerful, right? Like it's between that Urza and Notion for me for sure.
So for me, I like Sheoldred more than I like Urza.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that Urza kind of banks on the idea that you are playing your commander
to
get the full like value out of that Urza, and
for sure I agree,
and the way that I've been playing the deck and kind of encouraging people to play the deck is maybe don't go as hard into the drop your commander and figure shit out path.
Yes. And, no, I've been pushing the same thing for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's where I like Shieldred more, because Shieldred, when you just kind of like drop it and then just like, it's like, it's literally like throwing a loaded gun on the table,
mm-hmm.
because people have to figure out what to do with it. And it's kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, I agree with that part explicitly, like 100%. It is the two black investment that definitely adds up every once in a while. And then mm-hmm. the other aspect of it is like, it does the like Eidolon rhetoric thing, right? Where it like, it doesn't exactly stop people from doing stuff, right? Which is why, you know, so we talked a little bit about, and I know we talked about on the show before, how Notion Thief has sort of fallen off just in general because mm-hmm. of, you know, Bowmasters, right? Which is like perfectly logical sort of progression of events, right? The sort of like counter to that is that Notion Thief, I've seen it played now in many games, and I think because people aren't expecting it to be around anymore, it's actually performing at a higher level,
right?
Which I find really interesting.
I mean, like, I think there is, this is what's kind of interesting, because I talked about this,
yeah,
like burping here. Can you tell I'm on my second monster? So it's kind of interesting because like I talked to Phoenix about this a little bit, and he was like saying like this two drop or whatever to play like Notion Thief. And I'm like, I feel like the deck is at the like four drop capacity.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I know for my version, I'm on Kitten, Metamorph, Shieldred, Talion, Beseech the Mirror, Mindbreak Trap, the One mm-hmm. Ring, Smothering Tithe. Like, we have...
Yeah, I think we have the same amount of four drops for sure.
Yeah, it's like, I have a bunch of big four drops, and, like, if I'm cutting something for Notion Thief, right now I have Narset, Parter of Veils kind of in that Notion.
I did see slot. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I kind of like Narset a little bit more.
Sure.
From the perspective of the Bowmasters, like stops both of them pretty equally. Granted, this one has the benefit of being able to like hang around a little bit longer than an Ocean Thief.
I will definitely give you that for sure.
And the other thing that I like about it is that it is card selection, which is mm-hmm. a thing that when you're playing a control deck, I really like.
You know, honestly, I didn't really even think about Narset, but you're kind of selling me on it. I'm not going to lie. It was one of those things I saw on your list, and I was like, ah, yeah, whatever. But now that I'm thinking about it, like, it really does. It really, because the whole point of me really being high on Notion Thief right now is that it really dunks on blue form, right?
Right.
And so there's a certain aspect of like, okay, but like until you get Tivit down, you can't block a Chrom, and you're not gonna block a Chrom because you want to attack with Tivit, right?
Right.
Minamo being the exception to the rule there. But I don't know. There's something about that idea that like, yeah, so you're gonna get aggroed pretty hard, right? But we also have cards like Shieldred to, you know, gum up the board so that they need to use like a Chrom to be able to get it. And like, if defending a Narset is worth like leaving up Tivit as a blocker, I think that's probably an equation worth like running
at. Oh, absolutely.
Know? Yeah. So that's really interesting to me. You know, it's sort of the equation of like, okay, do I want my Narset to be board wipe proof? Do I want it to be Bowmasters proof? Or do I want the ability to take my opponent's draws, have a bit of a more expensive flash threat, but also have it be a little more like Chrom proof, basically.
Right. I really like the other thing that I like about it is, I don't like the whole, like, I have a Notion Thief, then you have a Notion Thief, and then we all have a Notion Thief, and then like figuring that stuff out. And it just kind of says no to all of that.
Yeah.
And part of,
I'm not really usually worried in those circumstances, but
I'm not either. And this is kind of my, like, this is more of a like testament to how like I tend to include cards that cover like as many bases as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, yes, it's a like incredibly fringe scenario, but it is a scenario. So that's like part of my thought process there. I'll tell you a card that I'm super like not sure if I want to play or not is Tezzeret.
That was one that it is a difference between our lists, and I'm a little unsure about it too.
I am as well. It is a card that I really like.
Yeah.
But also it could be a better card, like, or a different, not necessarily a better card. It could be a different card.
Yeah. Like, so I literally was just like talking last week about how it was one of the MVPs of Kinnan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Kinnan is just like a wildly different Tezzeret deck, right? Like the ability to like go grab Basalt Monolith, keep your Tezzeret out, and then like whatever enabler you need, it probably is colorless to be able to activate, right? So, or unless it's Thrasios, right? So that's a very different world than the world in which Tezzeret is just like, okay, maybe it gets Time Sieve, but like you're showing everybody, hey, I'm going to get Time Sieve, or it gets your One Ring, which is sick, and that like definitely doesn't hurt. But then you have to fully sacrifice Tezzeret to do that. Like, how much do you want that, you know, double blue 5-mana One Ring? You know,
it's interesting because I actually feel like now that I have Beseech the Mirror, I kind of like Tezzeret less.
Yeah, I think Beseech really does cover that spot for sure. Beseech the other day, like, and so like literally I had
Beseech is like the MVP of the deck, by the way. Beseech is stupid.
Yeah, so I want to talk about another pro and con about Shieldred, which I did not say before. So there's like this, like, I think the big debate for me before Saturday is literally the Shieldred versus Notion debate. You sort of sold me on the Urza can suck a muff argument. Like, don't get me wrong, Urza's really strong. I love turning Grafdigger's Rage into a mana rock. Like, I love that shit any day of the week, right? And the Karnstructs do get out of hand, but not in the same capacity that Shieldred
just puts so much. The difference is that Shieldred just is so passive, and people don't think about it until it's way too fucking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And nobody's like concerned about it until they hit 10 life. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, shit, that Shieldred's really annoying.
Yeah. you know, one thing I'm actually a little annoyed about with the Invitational was they made this whole announcement like, hey, we've got these proxies available playtest cards available.
Right.
From Playing with Power, you can come grab them first come, first serve. Right. And then they go, it's first come, first serve, limited quantity. And it's like, OK. So say you're someone who says, hey, I really want this card in my deck. I literally cannot afford this thing. I also have to work a job and can only get there Friday night.
Right.
Like, that sucks if you show up to this tournament and then suddenly you're like, okay, yeah, no, I guess I couldn't get a proxy in time. Like, you know, maybe that's me being nitpicky, but like,
I think they should absolutely be like, if you put a like request in, they should be.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Right. Is like, I want to be able to know that I don't have to fucking lug my Time Twister to this tournament. I really don't want to have to do that. You know,
well, first of all, you shouldn't be playing Time Twister. You should be playing Windfall.
So this is another conversation I wanted to have is Time Twister versus Windfall, because I've been on Windfall forever, like actually forever.
Yep.
I'm leaning back towards Time Twister. Sell me on Windfall.
So here is why I like Windfall more than I like Time Twister.
Yes.
And it has a lot to do with the fact that it can, in a lot of situations, permanently deal with issues that you know are in people's hands.
Okay.
So there is at minimum one card in your deck that exiles cards when they go to the graveyard. Called Dothy Void.
Dothy Void. Sure, yeah.
So there is that. Part of the reason that I like Windfall more is we have a pretty decent amount of grave hate, and I can manage a threat when it's in a graveyard, right?
Okay.
A threat when it's in your library is a lot harder for me to deal with. So if I'm using time, so there were multiple times at Columbus where I used Windfall.
Yeah.
Like, I would just sit on it until I saw somebody tutored, and then I was just like, okay, cool, Windfall. And they're like, oh shit, that's not in my hand anymore. And I was like, yeah, that was the point. Whereas with a time twister, I don't have that same level of like control because they're shuffling it back in. There's still a pretty reasonable chance that they get it back.
If I totally understood.
What'd you say?
I said totally understood for sure.
So I like the ability that it's like public information. I can see it in there. The only downside of it is it does mean that we are a little bit more Savine's wreck reliant. In some scenarios. However, I think that is fine for the most part.
I mean, so me being off consultation, it makes like using my Tainted Pact pretty awkward.
Well, I think it's bizarre that you're not on DC, but
okay. So yeah, here let's talk about that. What's your thought process there?
Why are you not playing Demonic Consultation?
Card
sucks. In your. I mean, yeah, but it does exactly what you want it to do when you're winning the game.
That's the thing. I don't think it does what I want it to do. There's been many situations where I have literally lost the game because I have a consult in hand. Like it's just burning a hole in my hand, and the games that it has won me are much fewer and farther in between. I could definitely be sold on putting it back in, but, and this is, you know, it was one of the tests of this current iteration. Right. Mm-hmm. But for me, consult is just like, I don't know. It is a card that does not consistently provide value, right? It forces you into situations where you're like, oops, accidentally exiled my whole deck. Oh man, I guess I'm screwed because this wasn't literally anything else.
I don't use it in those situations like ever. I like the way I look at it is it's a one mana. So the way literally all I ever use it for, especially after getting burned by it so many times early on, when playing this is because, you know, like in decks like Rog'Sai and Tymnachron and stuff, you can use it pretty aggressively. In this deck, you don't use it aggressively, even remotely. Yeah. And honestly, you probably shouldn't even Tainted Pact aggressively.
That's fine. I don't mind a deep Tainted Pact, but I get your point.
Sure. Like my like it is a win condition, and I think having the density of win conditions is exactly where I want to be.
Sure.
You know, Time Sieve kind of feels like Garbo on its own also. So it's like,
sure,
you know, that's how I justify it in my head. You know, it's like it's
but like it's not a one card win condition with your commander, right? Like that's
but the other thing to keep in mind though too is when you're going to win with Thassa's Oracle, it is one mana less that you can defend that win attempt. And like I think that is a huge like reason to keep it because of the fact that like just that in and of itself you're able to afford, hey, I have this Flusterstorm in hand.
Yeah.
And I'm really tight on mana, so.
Yeah, I am still a Mystical Tutor. Maybe that's what the swap is.
Yeah, Mystical Tutor, poo-poo pee-pee.
Yeah, there are like, more and more I'm cutting that card from a lot of my decks, which is really interesting to me.
Okay, so this is what I've said to people. I think I've said this to you, too, but especially in Tivit.
Yeah.
Which is a control deck.
Sure.
What am I Mystical Tutoring for? Look at my list and tell me what am I Mystical Tutoring for?
Like, no, I've had the same conversation like 100 times with people for sure.
Like, and honestly, I feel like that in like every deck that it's in, that isn't like, not even in Kirk Tsukishima. I don't think I would play it either.
Yeah,
it's just the I never want to tutor with it ever.
Yeah, no, it's super fair.
Like,
all right, here's the one I'm gonna hit you with.
Okay.
Pivoting back to cards you're not playing. Why are you not on Minamo?
I think that the use case of it is so incredibly like narrow.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. What do you mean? The like untapping Tivit or the One Ring thing, like.
You don't think Tivit with Vigilance is good? I think that's insane.
It is very good, but you know how you don't want to play Homeward Path and Kinnan because of you don't want to play like what's it called? Perplexing Chimera. That's kind of how I feel about this card. Like if I was in green.
It's not colorless, right?
It's not colorless, but like if I had green in a crop rotation where I could like easily get that card out regularly, I would be more high on it. But the fact that it is not something that I can consistently land on the table and it really like the amount of games where it lines up doesn't feel like it's worth the slot for me.
That's interesting, because I sort of see the opposite, where it's like it's because it's not colorless and because it's blue, it feels extremely like free to be able to play this card, right? So like it is like blue is your most important color. You're able to just, once again, I think Tivit with Vigilance is actually insane for stalled out games. And then the One Ring stuff is like cute, but like, I don't know, the Vigilant Tivit is awesome, and double draw from One Ring is like very, very good. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I'm with it. And once again, like I would not make this argument for colorless land. Blue land, I will 100%.
Honestly, if I wanted my Tivit to have Vigilance, I would play White Plume Adventure.
Oh, that does.
Yeah, untaps it. Untap a creature at the beginning of every.
Yeah.
Like White Plume Adventure is that, but like has upside, and I don't need to tap a land down for it.
You know what Charles suggested to me that I found really interesting is Far Traveler, which is a.
I definitely know what that does.
It's a background, and it says commander creatures have at the end of your turn, exile and return them, right? So you literally get to go in, bop someone with Tivit, exile your own Tivit, have it come back to the battlefield.
Yeah.
I thought that one was really, really interesting. I don't know that I'm going to like play it for this tournament, but I was like, oh, okay. Like that's actually really sick.
Wouldn't just Teleportation Circle be better?
It's more expensive.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess it's one mana more expensive, but you can exile anything, not just your commander.
Thassa is also probably better in that circumstance too, right?
Yeah, because it can, at the beginning of your end step, exile up to one target artifact or creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. Yeah, so just like Thassa Deep Dwelling is just like actually factually, if you're gonna play Far Traveler, just play Thassa, right? Like
yeah I mean, it doesn't have like too many synergies in the deck. It works with like
It works with Bowmasters. It works to reset Thoracle. It works to reset Metamorph. It works to reset.
That is. I do think the Thoracle example is actually pretty funny. Just being like, all right, cool.
It also can reset if you're playing Narset. It can reset your Narset.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It can reset a lot of stuff. It can reset your Mystic Remora.
Is it any permanent?
Thassa Deep Dwelling, if I recall, is. Yeah. No, it's target creature. Never mind.
Yeah. Okay. I think circle is too.
Yeah. So circle is creature or artifact.
Is Far Traveler too?
No, Far Traveler is just commander creatures. Far Traveler is, let me pull it back up.
At the beginning of your end step, exile to one target tapped creature. Okay. So it has to be a tapped creature too.
Yeah. That's why, like, if I'm playing Far Traveler, like low key, I would just much rather play. I would much rather play Deep Plume or White Plume Adventure, which I actually think is like I actually do think the two initiative creatures, those two white initiative creatures, are worth like considering. I don't know that I would play them in this tournament, but
not like, the four drop one, right?
The four drop one's pretty good too, because it gives your stuff pro creatures. Or gives up to one target creature pro creature when you attack.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good when your commander is all like, about hitting people in the face.
Compared to all the other potential four drops in this deck, I'm just not seeing it.
Fully agree. Fully agree. We are in one mind there. But basically my point being is that like if I'm considering Minamo, I feel like I have other cards that I would think about, like, because like
those are spells though, right? Like spells are a much more important slot than like you're an Urza Saga, right? Like I would rather much play a Minamo than an Urza Saga instead.
Yeah. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, untap a creature you control. If you've completed a dungeon, untap all creatures you control instead.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, apart from untapping Tivit.
I don't know that that's entirely true.
What does it do?
Untaps your creatures, so now all your creatures have vigilance.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's actually quite good.
There are, like, two bodies we care about, I think.
Yeah. But regardless, like, I don't know. I've never, when I tested Minamo, I thought it was, like, I personally liked Urza Saga a lot more.
Sure.
I like being able to just, like, make a land drop and then, like, oh, hey, look, here's this Grafdigger's Cage. Well, yeah. That's cute. That's funny. Yeah. And then, like, you know, I have made bodies with it. I also, like, that is one of the lands that I'm, like, mm-hmm. pretty mid on. So, like, if I were to cut it, I would probably put in Minamo, but I also don't own a Minamo anymore. So it's, like, mm-hmm. Also a relevant piece to that equation. But yeah, I do totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I just also didn't love the, like, I'm not in love with the card. Like, it's a very feeling for me.
Yeah, I get that. I do. Yeah, I don't know. For me, it feels so free, but
that's fair.
I don't know that I'm sold on Time Twister versus Windfall though.
I just cannot, like, I don't think the math makes sense to me in a control deck to mm-hmm. shuffle in people's hands, and, like, I would much rather use my wheel disruptively than like as a Grave Hate piece.
Sure.
Because, like, I already play enough Grave Hate where, like, getting it into their yard is, like, pretty hard for them to deal with to begin
with. Yeah, now the Douthi argument is actually pretty solid. I think that is my favorite one so far, is that it turns Douthi Voidwalker into an actual win con.
Mm-hmm.
so that's definitely worth sort of exploring in that sense. Like, there's, you know, as far as, like, you know, oh, I've had my win con removed. It's like, great, I'll get a big hand, get Douthi, and then just do that, right? Which is pretty sick. So all of that's really interesting to me. Let's see here. Okay. All right. I'm going back and forth between these two.
It's also funny because I think one of my favorite things was the people who commented on my list from Columbus who were like, oh, they're not playing Transmute Artifact because of the budgetary reasons. And it's like, no, I'm actually not playing Transmute Artifact because I just don't like the card.
Yeah, I think you're wrong on that one, but I'll let you have it.
I mean, it is generally I like being able to use Werve Invention as, like, a final fortune if I need it to be. It also, because you can go grab Time Sieve at instant speed and take an extra turn on top of people. You also don't have to sacrifice an artifact when you cast it. And I cannot tell you how many times I have been playing Tivit and I've had Transmute in hand, and the fact that I needed to sacrifice an artifact threw off the win, like, math so heavily.
My counter argument is, I can't tell you how many times that I would have won with Transmute Artifact that it would be straight up unplayable as a Werve Invention. Like, I would not be able to cast that, you know?
Why? It's the because exact same amount of mana.
No, it's not. It's blue-blue. It's supposed to blue-blue-blue and X.
Well, the X doesn't matter because of the fact...
It absolutely does, Callahan. If you sacrifice a 2-drop and go get a 2-drop, it extremely matters.
Sure,
like,
but...
You can cast Transmute for blue-blue and get a Time Sieve onto the battlefield and have enough stuff to sacrifice, right? Whereas...
Where has Improvise?
I'm aware of Improvise.
Yeah, like, doesn't mean you Improvise... Have like, kind of offsets that, where it's just blue, blue, blue. I've never cast, like, paid actual mana into the X cost.
Right. Yeah, I understand that part. I don't know. I have had many examples where I think I like real life examples of times where I can sacrifice a clue and get there, but, like, literally with exactly enough artifacts for me. But
it's very funny because, like, I've had the literal opposite experience of it of. Man, if this was a were.
Okay. This is an interesting one for sure. I think I'm definitely sticking to my guns on this.
I'm sticking to my guns on it too, but you know, like,
yeah.
All I know is just I'm putting this out into the world. I'm not playing it because of budgetary concerns. I'm playing it because I don't like the card. just so we are clear, I almost responded to that Moxfield comment to be like, actually,
what you don't realize, commenter.
What you don't realize, commenter, is that you're a fool. I'm actually like 5D chessing you right now.
Oh my god. Why aren't you on Grim Monolith?
I don't like paying 2 mana for it. I'd just rather be on a Talisman.
Okay.
I've lost some. It just like the play pattern for me. I think it's a lot worse in a deck where you don't have it post Gnaws. The way I process it is generally when I'm playing it, I kind of have to take a turn off to play it. And
that is fair.
And I'm in a control deck and I'd much rather just leave up mana to like interact.
Yeah.
And so like I would say this is if I ever do decide to put like Gnaws into this list, I would probably put that back in. Because it is significantly better post Gnaws than it is when I just kind of need to take a turn off the play.
Yeah, I don't know about, like, I don't associate Grim Monolith with Gnaws. I associate it with the fact that we have a 6-mana commander in the command zone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think it, like, makes more keepable hands.
Yeah, it's just, I run into this thing where it's just, like, I will play it and then like I feel like every time I've cast a Grim Monolith and Tivit, I've lost the following turn. Okay,
that's really interesting.
And it happened enough times in a row that I took the card and I threw it across the room. I do recognize that I play a pretty slim like mana rock, like sweet.
Yeah, you're down 2 for me, I think.
Hmm?
You're down 2 for me. Actually, you're down, I guess, you have 2 less mana rocks, and we swap Imposter Mech for top, I guess. The artifact count there.
Yeah.
Which is also another reason the Transmute artifact works better with my deck, because I'm on 2 more artifacts.
Right. Well, and also why I like War a lot more is because Imposter Mech is, like, kind of bananas with War.
Yeah, I like kind of want to be on 1 more clone. I don't really know, though.
I like Imposter Mech a lot. I really like that I can make a Dockside without worrying about other people making a copy of my Dockside, if that makes sense. Or I can make a copy.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, like, I think that's the one thing I like about it. It also can just... go ahead.
I would lean more towards Flesh Duplicate personally, now that that's a card. But...
If I was in a deck that didn't tutor artifacts as aggressively as this, I would probably like to you this way. Yeah. If I ever move off War and I move off Tezzeret both, then I would probably move over to Flesh Duplicate.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a big difference between our decks too.
It's just so much easier for me to get access to Imposter Mech.
Yeah. I think that part is definitely very true. Yeah, it's just like another card that feeds Dockside, though, which is I'm not super thrilled about.
I've stopped caring. I'm just like, you know what? Everybody's feeding Dockside. It is what it is. Like, if I'm making decisions based on that anymore, then I'm just like artificially hamstringing myself.
Right. Understood.
Because like everybody's feeding Dockside. So it's like I can either just like play good cards and deal with it or like...
No, I get it.
I have played so many decks now in a row that just feed Dockside that I have just made my peace with the fact that I'm feeding Dockside.
Like you play your Blind Obedience and you hope that's enough.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, if you're a white deck and you're not playing Blind Obedience, I do think objectively
in the current incorrect. Meta, that's a very
100% incorrect.
Yeah.
Like.
No, I'm with you. Like that card is just at an all-time premium for sure.
It is the best Blind Obedience. I was talking to EK about this a couple days ago, where EK is wanting to build a CEDH deck, And we were talking about different decks, and he was like talking about like white decks, and he was just like, oh, I could play this as like a Dockside Hate piece. And I was like, only one card you need is a Dockside Hate piece, and it's called Blind Obedience, baby.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, Manglehorn.
Yes, Manglehorn's also incredible.
Have you thought about Grand Arbiter?
I have. I tested it.
Yeah.
It kind of comes. So, you know how we feel like on paper, Shieldred feels like it doesn't do enough?
Yeah.
That's what in practice Grand Arbiter feels like.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Where on paper, it feels like it does a ton, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, this is super, like, really strong, sure. Does a sure. ton for you. And then I play it and I'm like, man, this did fucking nothing.
Yeah. That's pretty fair.
That's how I feel about it. It's
yeah.
The card that I am actually very heavily considering cutting specifically to include to play Dam, because I kind of want to be on Dam as well as Winds and Toxic is March of Swirling Mist. I've been so mid on just March. Cut that.
I literally just cut it. Yeah.
It has been the most like card I've ever played in this deck. There are some decks that it is so good, and this just ain't it.
Yeah. I'm like also in the place where I'm like considering the Languish Dam swap.
I love a good Languish.
Mm-hmm.
Languish is so good. And because we did talk about this on the show like a few months ago, where we were just kind of like, Languish and Tivit's just like really good.
Yeah, I'm conflicted, right? Like, I like Winds too, right? But for me, Winds is just like, I feel like I'm never overloading it in Tivit. That's where I usually end up on it. In this deck specifically, I definitely can see situations where it happens, right? But like the tempo play of the board wipes, and especially from what I've been seeing from the meta right now, is like, I think Winds is an amazing card, and also I just don't know that I'm ever going to get away with it. You know,
that's fair.
Yeah,
I do think like your version can probably get away with it because you're on like counterbalance, so you have a little bit more protective pieces for it. I like it a lot because it's like a card that I don't mind taking a turn off to cast because it like really sets everybody behind. So it's like the one card that I'm usually kind of like, all right, well, if I have to tap out to cast this, it's fine. Like,
right,
I usually have a piece of backup with it.
I
like Winds, but it like kind of the reason that I also want to be on DM is I kind of think that being on four board wipes, if you count Psychrift, is like where you want to be.
Yeah, I think Tivit being on more board wipes is just correct. I think in general, like I literally just during that coaching session game I was telling you about, my opponent was like, okay, yeah, Pirate plus Malcolm, and then like Mana Dork and Mana Dork for my two opponents. And I was like, absolutely, I will deluge this board right now. Yeah. Like, for sure, it's so free.
I wish there was like another instant speed board.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be sick.
Like, I really wish, like, there was. What I really wish actually is that like what's the card that whenever somebody who the attacking player you exile the attacking creatures and from Ixalan it's the bane of standard players.
Settle the wreckage.
I wish Settle the Wreckage was just everybody because it's so good, and I've wrecked so many people.
It wouldn't change anything. Because it's only exiles attacking creatures, right?
Well, what I'm saying is I wish it didn't like say attacking creatures. It just said opponents. Sure. That would be very strong, but or you could only cast it during the attack step or whatever. Like, there's so many ways that I could word that card that would make it immediately playable. But it's like I kind of want another. I wonder if like filter out is worth considering.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, like the artifacts and enchantments aren't the problem against this deck. It's the creatures, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Not even the problem per se. Also, one thing I keep forgetting to mention about Shieldred is it does sort of answer one of the fundamental problems that Tivit faces, which is one of the reasons I'm kind of inclined to keep it in, which is that Tivit is a creature light control deck, mm-hmm. right? So in many circumstances, you're going to end up where like you will be like, oh, yeah, I have Heuristic Study and I wipe the board and like all of this stuff. It's like, but I'm down to 18 now, and I've sort of created an accidental artificial clock for myself. And then you go get Shieldred and you're like, okay, well, no. Now all these clues are little life batteries. Thank you so much. Like,
and my Heuristic Study gains me a life every turn.
Right. And like that is actually way bigger than you think. Like Sarah Ascendant was a card I was looking at for some time early on in this deck's life for that very reason. So
I mean, it makes wheels like win cons, right? Like, I have won a non-zero amount of games with Shieldred by just going, cool, Windfall, you're dead. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and maybe the use cases I've seen with it were not enough, but like I was controlling a game the other day where I was like, oh man, I would love to just Windfall kill them right now, and I'm like, oh, it does like 8 damage. Right. Like it's good, but it's not like that, you know?
Yeah.
And which is one of the reasons that like one of the other Time Twister arguments, right, is like you will always deal 14 damage with Time Twister, right? Like that is
the floor for Twister with that is a lot higher.
Yes, exactly. But once again, talk about the Douthi wheel scenarios with Windfall are like way better for that too, right? There's so many like gives and takes with these cards, right?
And I think
the shitty argument is like also that Notion Thief is better with all of them, right? But that's not the luxury we have right now.
I think that is an interesting argument with interesting discussion piece with the like gives and takes thing, because I think that like kind of goes into a very like hard to pinpoint exactly what it is, but specifically like how those little decision trees you make in your deck building process are going to, you need to make those based on what you know about yourself as a player. Because like there are some really like, I think this is, I honestly, if I'm going to use a really good example, I think a good example of this is War of Invention and Transmute Artifact, because I think you can see through our discussion of that where you can see the differences in how Ian and I prioritize play pattern,
right? For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's like, I think recognizing your priorities as a player and then making deck building decisions based upon that is like very crucial, because it's like the differences between our lists, you can see like I like to be able to play on the stack a little bit more than Ian. Right. So it's like,
is that true?
I tend to play a lot more like sit back and like do things in response.
Yeah, I guess.
And your card selection is a lot more proactive.
Yeah. So you really only have two more instant speed threats than I do in the deck as is.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
But the nature of those threats is a little bit different, right? Like the war is definitely like a piece that really is indicative of the patterns that you're talking about, right?
And I think the war imposter mech combo, I think, is actually very indicative, because you can see like the thought process there very clearly. Right.
How's Stubbs been for you?
MVP, baby. So fucking
good. Okay. It's, I really so love Stubbs. I love that card, and I kind of wanted to play
it's never bad. I would play it over Spell Snare and in instant.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to cut Spell Snare for it, but I feel like I can find a spot.
Cut Misty Tootie. Like, you know, like what?
I know I did that for console.
Well, yeah, that's true. No, Stubborn Denial is really good, because like, so first of all, you have like a handful of creatures that actually turn it on. Which is kind of, well, specifically two creatures in your deck. But it can be more depending upon the situation. But like the worst, like the its floor is it's a slightly worse spell pierce.
Yeah.
Its ceiling is it's negate on steroids. And so like to me, like if I'm making the because like so many people were like on miscast for or whatever, and I'm like, that's fine. I like the like the floor of stubborn denial to me is like good enough. Like, I don't think it's better. I don't think it's significantly worse than spell Pierce enough to justify playing Pierce over stubborn denial. Yeah. And that's where I'm just like, listen, I have enough scenarios where stubborn denial is just like pog.
Yeah.
Fucking love this card.
Okay, sick. Yeah, it's a card I'm really interested in. I don't know what spot to put it in right now, but I do have a lot of interest in including it in the deck for sure.
Dispel's good one.
No, I'm Dispel ride or die, baby.
I've been so utterly unenthused by Dispel.
I'm aware. So is literally everyone else in the community, but Dispel has not stopped being that like workhorse for me.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason it's still in my deck. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, I haven't cut it, but
yet.
It's a card that I do not feel great about playing.
That was funny. We're both Untouched. I didn't realize that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a recent ad for me. So
I've been Untouched for a while. I remember testing it for Columbus and then just being like, oh, this is just like the dumbest card I think of. Like, it does what I want Dressdown to do, but better.
Sometimes I wonder if Besiege is like too cute. I don't know.
I mean, it won me two matches at Columbus.
Yeah.
Little bit of bias towards it.
sure. And like, don't get me wrong, it was like insane the game I played it the other day. So like, but I don't know, like the non-Tivit version of Besiege, I guess I keep looking at it like it's like this triple black early game threat, and it's just not. It's nope. it's a finisher.
Yep, yeah. It's a finisher. And also like, I'm playing Dark Rit, so like whatever.
Well, that's I was flipping through some opening hands, and like that to me was like, okay, maybe it's something to at least consider not playing, but I'm like, nah, that ain't it.
Nah, there's enough situations where you're just like, damn, this just won me the fucking game. Yeah.
No, for sure.
It's very good.
I don't know. I think I'm definitely like, if anything, this conversation has made me feel better about bringing Tivit. I think the big one, the two I'm considering seeing your work on this list is Stubbs and Narset. The Narset conversation really got sort of the gears moving.
Yeah.
That, you know,
I think that draw hate right now in this meta is like at such a premium.
Best it's ever fucking been.
Like, that's why I'm trying to find a slot for Bowmasters, because like, yeah. I don't love Bowmasters in this deck by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. However, draw hate is just so fucking good.
Yeah, I'm on it right now. You know, it's sort of one of those things that I learned this lesson at Baltimore. You don't tutor for Bowmasters, but if you draw Bowmasters, you're fine.
Yeah,
you know, it's just very solid.
I do think the play pattern of it is a little awkward. Yeah. But like, I think that's, I can live with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's fine. The one card I'm interested that you don't play is Containment Priest. Is there a reason why?
It's narrow. I like Containment Priest a lot. Mm-hmm. I just, one, it shuts off Kitten Lines, which is a little awkward. And it having that anti-synergy in the deck is that like little piece that I needed to be like, it's not worth it for me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good card. I think, you know, like, fuck Kinnan, you know, basically is sort of the motto there, right? But like, it doesn't really hate too, I guess, to say as well, right? Mm-hmm. Which are two very good decks in the format. And I guess it stops Food Chain Lines unless I'm crazy.
No, because you still cast Food Chain, unless it's like, no, it doesn't even stop Sliver because you cast the stuff off of
if a non-token creature went into the battlefield and it wasn't, oh no, because they get cast.
Yeah, they cast all that stuff, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think you just talked me into my Bowmaster swap.
There we go. Boom.
Yeah, I also do, like, I do think generally, I said this on the podcast last week, I think, is I do think there is a correct number of these, like, Containment Priest effects to play. The thing is that in this deck, I do notice that there is like a lot of answers to issues. And I feel like this deck is maybe uniquely positioned to not need to play Containment Priest and those things.
Right, right. So, you know, I think the inclination with a lot of these like Esper Bear strategies is like, okay, let's throw some more dudes in here and like make it a thing, right? But Tivit sort of benefits from the fact that like we can wipe the board and play a bunch of dudes, right? So like the fact that I'm on 14 creatures, one of them I consider basically like, actually, I think two of them are not on board creatures, right? Like Thoracle, Displacer Kitten are not ones I want to put on the board until I'm winning, right? Grand Abolisher, I'd even argue, is the exact same way. So that's basically like 13 creatures that I, or sorry, of my 14 creatures, three of them I don't want. So 11 creatures are really what I'm trying to put on the board, right? 11 creatures out of a 100 card deck means that I'm very happy to just blow up everybody's spot whenever it's convenient for me, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Yeah. I just want another board wipe that lets me keep Tivit is the problem.
Me too.
Yeah. I like, so for me, I'm either switching to Winds or Languish. Winds is just making me nervous. It really is. But like Winds, the argument for Winds that I really am enjoying right now is like, I don't give up the utility that Dam has with the current deck, which is like, it can be STR, single target removal,
yep,
or it can be that full wipe, right? So I actually may have just mid-sentence convinced myself that I might just switch to Winds.
I think the utility, like, that's the reason why I also understand your like hesitancy with it, because I know I'm like a huge proponent of it, but I still have that same hesitancy.
Yeah.
And like, to me, the fact that you have that utility with it, it's the same thing that makes Psycrift playable to me. Right.
Yeah. I mean, look, Psycrift is I think incomparable to any other card, right? Like there's a reason we put it as our S tier board wipe, right? But it really is like a whole nother level. The instant speed nature of it's like giant, and the ability to time it is like insane. But I've also sorcery speed overloaded Psycrift many, many times.
Right.
I literally just won a game 2 days ago by doing that.
And so, I've also, you know, single target removal used it many times, right? Like it's
exactly
like that's exactly. Like, and when I compare it to it, that's like the aspect of it that I'm comparing it to, right? Is the ability of it to be so flexible.
Yes,
is what I like about Dam and Winds. Is I just think it's like both of them are, and there's a reason why I want to find a slot for Dam. Is I just am like, listen, I kind of want to be on all the board wipes.
Yes. Absolutely.
My Moxfield page is just not loading now.
I just had the same. I was literally gonna. I looked up Winds of Abandon to see which deck of mine has my Winds of Abandon in it.
Yeah,
and it Moxfield just absolutely just
shat it. So Moxfield is having a moment.
Hey, listen, we here at the Mind Sculptors fucking love Moxfield.
We love
it's
Moxfield.
Probably the best deck building up.
No, it's not probably. It just is.
If you could stop crashing mid episode, that'd be cool.
That'd be really cool. You know, Harry, while if you want to get on that.
While we're here, let's talk about something else that's pretty cool. Supporting this on Patreon. So if you're one of those frugal ladies, gentlemen, or anywhere in between, and you're like, hey, look, I don't know if I really want to invest in a podcast like the Mind Sculptors. Well, hey, what other podcast is literally sitting here having real life tournament prep talk as we're going through, you know? What other podcast is doing that? Now, have
Callahan Into the North.
And I had not on a consistent basis.
True.
So, you know, feel free to just, you know, you spend like $1 or $2. I don't know what's the lowest tier? One?
$2.
$2. You spend two smackaroons.
Two those, American doll hairs.
Two American USDs, and you get to be in our Discord. Cool, there's a lot of shit happening in there. People post stuff. It's nice. And you know, you get to support one of the 30 members of the Mind Sculptors.
Actually, you just support us too, and the other 30 just exist.
That's also very true. But no, seriously, if y'all can hit the like button and subscribe button, helps out a ton. Moxfield has just loaded for me, so I don't need you guys anymore.
Fuck Patreon, fuck all of you, we hate you.
Yeah, and especially those fuckers listening just in the podcast form. YouTube audience, you know I got your back. You guys are watching. You guys are supporting the
I'm over here. I've got your back, Spotify. Don't worry. I love you guys. You make us a weird amount of money compared to YouTube.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Now I'm sort of really changing my tone here. Spotify, listen, I've loved you the whole time.
So this is completely, this is super tangential, but totally if we had the exact same numbers on Spotify that we have on YouTube, we would actually make significantly more on Spotify. Because Spotify's ad rev deal that we have with them is like pretty good CPM. If you are listening to this on YouTube, actually fuck you. Why are you not listening to this on Spotify?
You know what? Let's shout out the real ballers who sit down at their home. They have Spotify and YouTube up and they hit play at the same time. That's the true
real heroes.
Real mind sculptors, man.
You're a real sculpty boy.
Honestly, if there's anyone out there willing to put themselves through that process, you've really earned my respect.
And if you
also, you can mute one, but don't tell the fucking Spotify gods that.
Don't tell the Spotify gods that. That's amazing. Yeah, I remember having a conversation with another creator when we were in Minneapolis, where I was just like, "Yeah, dude, like Spotify pays. Like, if you can build up an audience, like a podcasting audience on Spotify, like the payout on Spotify is nuts." So,
about to start uploading my videos to Spotify.
Yeah, you should.
That's a divot.
Back to Tibbet. Bowmasters is in my list now. It's sick. not the main list because I don't do my edits in the main list.
I usually don't. I feel like I haven't played Tibbet in a long enough time where people aren't going to be like, "Oh, look at the things Ian's doing on the deck."
Well, the thing is that whenever you update it on Moxfield, it immediately jumps up to the front of your updated queue.
Yeah.
So like when people go to the main page, they'll see, "Oh, Ian updated Cat and Sphinx." And then that's why I hide all of my edits.
I do normally too. I think this time I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, fuck. So I think we have a pretty good idea of where we want to be for this tournament this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty excited about it. Yeah. I'm also excited about the fact that my wife is coming with us. I'm just knocking my microphone all the way into the background. Don't worry about it.
I'm very excited for my wife to get us.
I am very excited for this weekend. I'm excited to be in Columbus. I am excited to be in Worthington, Columbus, which is where this tournament is at, which is I don't know why I'm giving so much detail, but I'm just kind of flexing the fact that I know Ohio very well.
Ooh, and what a flex it is.
It's a good state. When we were in Columbus, you were like, "Yeah, I actually don't hate Columbus." And it's like, "Yeah, because it's like a nice town." Like it's a good town. Biggest city in Ohio. Everybody thinks it's Cincinnati, but it's actually Columbus.
Oh my god.
Listen, as I grew up in Columbus, here's the thing that's going to be wild is you will get to experience some Ohio State game day stuff because that was one of the things when we were looking at like hotels and Airbnbs and all that and looking at pricing is like the room rate for the event is really good, but it's actually pretty normal. The only reason it's like better than what it would normally be is because Ohio State has played Penn State at home this weekend. So the entire town is just people coming in to see that game and then also play in the game. So, go Bucks. Hopefully they did not lose.